Suns Week and all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings, Voice of America listeners. I'm Muck Bill Yarbrough in for Sunny Young this Friday. Let's get into the October 6th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Starting off on the cricket field, South Africa, the only African nation participating at the 2023 Cricket World Cup, play their tournament opener tomorrow. They face 1996 champion Sri Lanka in Delhi. The South Africans head into the competition off the back of a come-from-behind series victory over Australia at home, and will be looking to carry that momentum into the tournament. Myron Nacker has more from Durban, South Africa. Sporty greetings, Myron.
Sporty greetings, McBeal. It does not get bigger than a 50-over World Cup in a country like India, where millions of people adore the sport. Staged every 4 years, it's the International Cricket Council's premier tournament. South Africa has appeared in every competition since 1992, making the semi-finals on 4 occasions. Having won just 3 matches at the tournament back in 2019, the current squad is determined to prove to the world that they can once again mix it up on the big stage. Protea's assistant coach Eric Simon says the team has acclimatized well to the subcontinent conditions and are ready to face Sri Lanka.
We have a tremendous experience now within the squad of India. You know, what it's like to be here, not just the conditions, but the hotels, the travel, what's involved with that. So a lot of it is things guys know and understand. I think it's supposed just really then about actually being involved in the World Cup and how one stays calm in the moment and focuses on the things that you guys probably hate so much us saying is the process. But one of my key mantras as a coach is that if we've got a clear plan, then all you have to worry about is execution. If your plan's not clear, you have stress about what to do plus the execution.
Simons was speaking at a news conference. Both teams have had contrasting results in the build-up to the tournament. While South Africa showed plenty of fighting spirit to beat Australia, Sri Lanka suffered a humiliating defeat to India in last month's Asia Cup final. They lost by 10 wickets after being bowled out for a paltry 50 runs. Simons says the Proteas have chosen not to concentrate too much on their opponent's current form.
Again, we really have to focus on what we do, what we want to do it and how we want to do it. But the fact that a team does come in with that sort of performance, certainly not going to, you know, we're not going to be unhappy about it, because psychologically it's going to be tough for them. But again, I think we do understand them. We understand the way that they bat and how we bowl, and hopefully the way we bowl does not suit the way they bat. And, you know, hopefully if we stick to our plans and do them correctly and have the correct field placings, we can keep them under that pressure.
Former Proteas all-rounder Chris Morris agrees with that mindset. He rates Sri Lanka as a dark horse. Morris spoke exclusively to VOA ahead of the World Cup.
To start well at the World Cup, well, I think the most important thing is getting put over that first hurdle of the first game against Sri Lanka. That's obviously your first port of call. And take it game by game. Don't look too far ahead in these tournaments, because especially with it being such a long tournament, you've got 10, you're playing against everybody. So you've got 10 games, you're playing everybody once, all 9 games. So to play against everybody once is the best format, in my opinion, but you've got to take it game by game and look after what's ahead of you.
Morris, who represented South Africa at the last World Cup and played a decade of Indian Premier League cricket, believes starting well is imperative.
Yeah, so Sri Lanka are a bit of a dark horse, in my opinion. I think they have got the potential to beat anyone on their day. They did the same in the 2019 World Cup by beating England. So they've definitely got the ability of pulling out a victory against a big side. Also, they are a subcontinent team playing in a subcontinent condition. So you cannot really count them out. In saying that, I do believe that we've got the team stronger than them, and I do believe we should beat them. But the pressures of a World Cup, as we've mentioned, are quite difficult to deal with, and anything can happen. So we're going to have to be at our best to beat the Sri Lankans.
A busy program lies ahead for South Africa, with their second match against arch-rivals Australia taking place next Thursday. All the focus now, though, lies on making a big impact at the Arun Jaitley Stadium against Sri Lanka. The tournament runs for 5 weeks, with the final taking place on 19th November in Gujarat. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Myron Naika in Durban, South Africa.
Making our way over to the track, the International Athletics Body World Athletics has for the first time taken over the running of the elections for Malawi's athletics. The move follows a long-running disagreement between the Malawi Athletics and the National Sports Governing Body, the Malawi National Council for Sports, over the eligibility of athletics committees to run the polls. Analysts say the intervention has saved Malawi Athletics from losing its reputation because of the never-ending wrangles. Lamek Messina reports from Blantyre. Sporty greetings, Lamek.
Sporty greetings to you too, Mukibeo. Disagreement between Malawi Athletics and the government sports governing body, the Malawi National Council of Sports, started in 2021 when the council appointed a caretaker executive committee for Malawi Athletics to hold elections. The National Council of Sports dissolved the incumbent executive committee for overstaying its mandate. The government sports organization also accused the dissolved committee of failing to submit financial reports. Members of the dissolved executive committee protested the appointment of the new committee and reported the matter to the International Athletics Body, World Athletics, for intervention. Frank Chitembea is the general secretary for Malawi Athletics. He told VOA that by appointing the new committee for athletics, the Sports Council overstepped its mandate.
They made a very big mistake because that was total intervention in the issues of athletics. The best thing they could have done was to maneuver the athletes to call for an extraordinary meeting, of which we couldn't have said anything because that was straightforward and we could have just taken what the athletes would have demanded.
Chitembea also faulted the Sports Council for demanding a financial report from the association.
I remember at one time we said we cannot give the financial reports because by then government was not able to give us any funding. So we're only getting the funding from World Athletics. How could we have given the report to them when they were not funding us? That was our argument. But at the end of the day, we managed to give them the reports. We felt like everything was in order.
A spokesperson for the Malawi National Council of Sports refused to comment on the matter, saying the Ministry of Sports is now handling the issue. Uchizi Nkandawile is the Minister of Sports in Malawi. He told VOA that it is wrong to say that the government was interfering in the affairs of the Malawi Athletics.
Government was just facilitating. That was just an attempt to say, maybe if we do this, we can have the association resolve the issue. That committee was appointed by the members, those people that are warring amongst themselves. They agreed, okay, let us have a committee. But do you understand that government is the one which provides resources, money? So if government says, okay, can you do this, 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 and that? We are going to provide you resources for you to take this route. Is that interference?
But Chitembea disputes that.
No. Caretaker was appointed by Sports Council without our knowledge. We are just informed that we have been dissolved, we have put a caretaker. Honestly speaking, we are not talking politics here, we are talking the reality. We don't appoint, we elect. If it was us, we wouldn't have even gone to World Athletics to say there's government intervention.
The World Athletics delegation came to Malawi last week on a fact-finding mission and it technically dissolved the caretaker committee the Malawi government appointed to run the elections. The delegation said it would instead take over the running of the polls, which will be held in November. Drake Chitambo is the chairperson of operations responsible for athletic activities in Malawi, and he welcomes the World Athletics intervention.
The wrangles were drawing the association closer into an institution of disrepute. Now, the coming in of World Athletics, I think it will bring sanity. Issues of perceived bias maybe will be removed, and the people whom the electorate want to carry the day without pointing fingers to say, I know these people were biased, and so on and so forth.
Chitambo said it would have been even better if Malawi managed to resolve the disagreements without foreign intervention. In the meantime, the World Athletics has given Malawi Athletics 21 days to nominate candidates. For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Lamek Masina in Blanta, Malawi.
Staying with athletics, we're witnessing some spectacular times in the marathon these days, and in more than one sense. 2 weeks ago, after Ethiopian Tigis Asafa produced an astonishing performance to break the women's world record, the elite fields in Chicago on Sunday have potential to offer not one, but two landmarks in road running. The energetic Andy Edwards reflects on the possibilities. Sporty greetings, Andy.
Sporty greetings, Mukbil. We've only begun to digest the measure of Tigis Asafa's achievement in knocking more than 2 minutes off the women's world record in Berlin and becoming the first woman to break 2 hours, 12 minutes. In Chicago on Sunday, there will be several women on the start line who could think, with justification, that they might match or exceed her performance. The prime candidate should be Ruth Chepngetich. The Kenyan ran within 14 seconds of what was then the world record set by compatriot Bridget Koskei to win Chicago last year. Now the target has been transformed, and from a 2:14, we're looking at sub-2:12 and better. Can Ruth Chepngetich do it? Her championship form in recent years has not been impressive, dropping out of both the Olympic and World Championship races. It's 4 years since she won her world title. Big city marathons, though, are different, specifically because of the pacemaking, which does not occur to any great extent in championship events. That doesn't mean they are easy, just different. Chepngetich knows the course in Chicago, one of the fastest anywhere. What difference have the new shoes been making? From interviewing elite athletes and hearing them talk publicly, the answer would be that they are a big factor. They do seem to save the body from much of the pounding which even the elite experience. This leads to the possible conclusion that a newcomer can have a major impact in the marathon much more frequently than before the era of these built-up shoes. Now, talking of newcomers, the first who comes to mind is the multi-talented Sifan Hassan. Winner of the London title in April, when she appeared to experience injury in the early stages and few expected her to finish, let alone run 2:18 for victory, she is a big talent who continues to surprise. Life is never dull when this Dutch athlete steps up to the line. She came away from the recent World Championships in Budapest with silver from the 5,000 and bronze in the 1,500 metres. Any interview with her leaves the impression that this gifted performer can somehow set daunting targets yet remain relaxed under pressure. We might well see her and Ruth Chepngetich vying to take the world record from Tigis Asafa. As for the men's race, there's an undoubted favourite in Kelvin Kiptum, the Kenyan being the second fastest man ever in the marathon. It's his turn now, given that Eliud Kipchoge failed to break his own world mark in Berlin 2 weeks ago. Kiptum's best is 2 hours, 1 minute and 25 seconds, set in winning London this April. No one else in the men's field has a time close to that. No outcome is a foregone conclusion, but Kiptum's likely race against the clock and the possible contest setting Ruth Chepngetich against Sifan Hassan could make marathon history in Chicago. For the sunny side of sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Switching over to the football field, Mike Mbonye spoke with African football analyst Fisayo Daro. He says the African stars were pivotal in some big games for their clubs, such as Ivorian Wilfred Saha, scoring for his club Galatasaray to help secure a win against Manchester United, and Moroccan Youssef En-Nesyri scoring for Sevilla in their 2-2 draw against PSV.
The top guns of Europe continued to lay down their credentials as to their possibility of winning the glamorous UEFA Champions League again this term. Some of the bookmakers' favourites on paper enjoyed wins, and some of them made it 2 wins out of 2, especially on Tuesday night, where former champions FC Bayern Munich and Real Madrid of Spain enjoyed away wins in their group encounters. Bayern Munich won 2-1 at FC Copenhagen, while the presence of Nigeria's Victor Osimhen was unable to stop Real Madrid from beating Napoli 3-2 on Tuesday. And on Wednesday, the defending champions Manchester City also made it 2 wins out of 2 in their group stage, courtesy of a 3-1 win away to German side RB Leipzig. Jeremy Doku, who has Ghanaian parents but now plays for Belgium, scored twice for the England and European champions in that game. FC Barcelona also continued their steady rise in back to the top of European football as they defeated FC Porto 1-0 away from home. Last year's beaten finalists Inter Milan also recorded their first win of the group stage campaign when they beat Benfica 1-0 in Italy. There were some not too good results for other top guns, with Paris Saint-Germain crumbling in the hands of Newcastle United in England, while Manchester United also lost the tomb to an unfancied Galatasaray team from Turkey.
In some of the second round games of the UEFA Champions League, did African players contribute to the success of their teams?
As it has been the norm in the UEFA Champions League for a while now, quite a few African players were in goal-scoring form for their respective clubs in the latest round of matches in the UEFA Champions League. And one, perhaps the most prominent among them, is the England-born Ivorian international, Wilfried Zaha, who scored the first goal for Galatasaray in their famous 3-2 win over Manchester United at Old Trafford. It was a game that achieved a number of milestones, for positive milestones for the Turkish club and negative ones for the English club. And to have Zaha, who was once linked to Manchester United, scoring the first goal, which was an equaliser after United went in front in that game, it was fantastic for the lad. And also on Tuesday night, the never-stopping Moroccan international striker Youssef En-Nesyri scored again for Sevilla in their 2-2 draw away to Dutch side PSV Eindhoven. And En-Nesyri's goal put the Spaniards 2-1 up, but they considered a late equaliser in a particular one. The other African on target in midweek was Ghanaian star Usman Bukari, who scores in 2 successive UEFA Champions League games. This time around, he scored for his side, Red Star Belgrade, in a 2-2 draw against the Young Boys of Switzerland. Bukari's goal came in the 80th minute, earning his side a priceless point in that particular encounter. Yeah, there were also some other Africans that contributed a side scoring, but all in all, these 3 players were on the score sheet and were in the spotlight for the right reasons during the week.
Fisayo, from the games played so far, any sign that the big names or teams have started showing their dominance?
Oh, definitely. Many of the top guns have begun to make the A while the sun shines. That's why a number of them have 100% wins from the first 2 matches played so far. You know, when you consider the respective groups, for instance, Bayern Munich stand clear of Group A, Real Madrid stand clear of Group C, both with 6 points from the 2 matches played so far. Atletico Madrid are top of Group E, Manchester City are top of Group G, and Barcelona are top of Group H. So, of course, this is just a mark of the top guns doing what they know how to do best, taking no prisoners and giving out no chances to any of the younger teams or smaller teams, in quotes, to have upsets. So it's what's expected, especially at this stage of this competition. Upsets are always very minimal. By the time they get to the knockout stage, then maybe they can start pouring. But for now, the big guns are doing the business. They want to wrap up the qualification to the next round as early as possible so that they can focus on their respective domestic tournaments, because by the end of this group stage in December, they have about 2 months before we get to the knockouts, and that's when teams concentrate on local, on domestic football, and see if they can make it multiple trophies in their season.
That was African football analyst Fisayo Diaro. He spoke with Iron Mike Mbonia on the phone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria. In basketball news, reigning NBA MVP Joel Embiid has told USA Basketball that he intends to play for them at the Paris Olympics. Embiid let the Federation and Managing Director Grant Hill know of his decision this week and revealed it publicly Thursday. USA Basketball does not plan to name its team until the spring of 2024, but if healthy, Embiid would seem certain to have one of the 12 spots on the squad that will be coached by Golden State's Steve Kerr. Lastly, we have Samson O'Malley with the African Sports Weekly wrap-up. Sporty greetings, Samson.
Sporty Friday greetings to you too, Mark Bill. We begin the wrap of Africa sports for this weekend with football. The Confederation of African Football, CAF, has congratulated Morocco on the decision by the FIFA Council to endorse the North African country to host the FIFA World Cup 2030. FIFA President Gianni Infantino earlier this week announced that the World Cup will be coming in 2030 to Africa for the second time in the 100-year history of the World Cup, when Morocco, in partnership with Portugal and Spain, will host the FIFA World Cup 2030.
Two continents, Africa and Europe, united not only in the celebration of football, but also in providing unique social and cultural cohesion. The only bid to host the FIFA World Cup 2030 will be the joint bid of Morocco, Portugal and Spain, where 101 games will be played.
The award of the FIFA World Cup 2030 is subject to a successful bidding process, which will be conducted by the FIFA administration and the decision of the FIFA Congress. On Thursday, the president of CAF, Dr. Patrice Motsepe, in a statement, said CAF is confident that the Morocco, Portugal and Spain FIFA World Cup 2030 partnership will be successful in the FIFA bidding process and will also obtain the FIFA Congress approval. Away from football now to rugby, where the Rugby Africa Women's Sevens Tournament scheduled to be held in Tunisia will run from the 14th to the 15th of October 2023. The Rugby Africa Women's Sevens Tournament is expected to be highly competitive, with teams from across the continent vying for glory. Ahead of the tournament, Kenya's Lionesses head coach Dennis Wanja unveiled his final squad for the tournament, which also acts as a qualifier for the Paris 2024 Olympics. The 12-member squad is led by Adihambo and experienced Janet Okilo, with a mix of experience and promising young talents. Coach Mwanje said this squad aims to make a significant impact on the international stage.
We're looking at Madagascar and Tunisia as well, being a home, being the hosts. But all in all, we are a respecter of no team. We know what we have. We respect teams, but we don't fear what they pose as a threat.
In basketball, the qualifying campaign for the fourth edition of the Basketball Africa League opens on Friday, October 6th, with the first round of the Road to Bale campaign, and concludes in early November with the Elite 16. A total of 19 clubs from all corners of the African continent are registered in the first round of the Road to Bale and will do battle across four cities to determine who makes it to the defining Elite 16 round. The Bale qualifier consists of East and West divisions, with teams split into groups A, B, C, D, and E. The two best placed teams from group A and B in the West division will advance to the Elite 16, while the winners of group C, D, and E in the East division will qualify automatically to the next round. In motorsport, the all-electric FIA World Rallycross Championship returns to South Africa this weekend for the first time after 4 years, with the World RX Stars tackling the mixed surface twists and turns of one of the sport's most spectacular tracks. An evolution of the popular FIA European Rallycross Championship, the World RX was launched in 2014. In 2022, the series entered a new era by going fully electric. Kenneth Timmy Hansen, who won the 2019 FIA World Rallycross Championship, whose father is a 14-times European Rallycross champion, told reporters in Cape Town that he was thrilled to be back to South Africa to participate in the rally.
We've been here a few times already, but it's been 4 years since 2019, and it just kind of feels magic to be in this city again. Everyone knows how fast electric cars are in acceleration. You get the instant torque.
From South Africa to East Africa, where cyclists from East African countries of Uganda, Kenya and Tanzania will compete in the second edition of the Jubilee Life Free Cycling Competition, to be held on the 26th of November in Nairobi. A total of 2,500 cyclists are expected to compete in the one-day event, which aims at promoting healthy living free of diseases that can be prevented through exercising. Louise Wachira is one of the organizers of the event. She explains why the Jubilee Life Free Cycling Competition is unique.
cycling and about the Grand Nairobi Bike Race and the Jubilee Leaf Free Race, it's not just about a competition. It's a testament of a shared commitment towards a healthier, greener and sustainable future.
And now to Namibia, where the president of the Namibia Aquatic Sports Federation, Rian Steen, says swimming is a life skill every Namibian should be encouraged to learn. Steen was speaking on the heels of the just concluded multiple sport course swimming galas, which brought together swimmers across different age categories. Swimmers who did well in these galas had the opportunities to qualify for the highly esteemed Namibia National Quartz Championship. Ultimately, a total of 246 talented swimmers aged between 7 and 71 years old entered and competed in breaststroke, butterfly, freestyle, and an individual medley.
I think, you know, swimming is a life skill. So it's something that everybody needs to do and everybody needs to learn. In Namibia, there's a lot of opportunities to learn to swim. We've got learn to swim schools, there's learn to swim. A lot of clubs in Otjiwarongo, in Ishikati. So yes, all the kids need to go out and go and learn and swim, and so they can eventually achieve this type of level.
In volleyball news, Rwanda will host the second edition of the African Volleyball Confederation Zone 5 Volleyball Club Championships from November the 6th to the 13th. A letter sent by the CAVB Zone 5 to volleyball associations indicates that the games include the men's and women's games. The tournament is set to be staged at the BK Arena in Kigali and is expected to attract over 30 teams from around the region. The CAVB Zone 5 Club Championships was last held in 2019. Zone 5 comprises 12 countries. These include Burundi, Djibouti, Egypt, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Kenya, Rwanda, Somalia, South Sudan, Tanzania, and Uganda. And now to Nigeria, where the third edition of the Nigerian National Chess Championship will be concluded on Monday, the 9th of October. This year's edition has been extended to 12 top chess players from the previous 10, who will do battle for the national title in a round-robin format. For the first time, the Nigerian Chess Federation is inducting Nigerian legends in the chess game and former national champions into the Nigerian Chess Hall of Fame. Among the inductees is a former Nigerian Minister of Health and National Chess Master, retired Vice Admiral Jibrila Anyila.
It means a lot to us that the flame we lit so many 50, 60 years ago is still burning brightly and even burning brighter. The Chess Federation, led by Deputy Inspector General of Police, Sani, retired, is doing a fantastic job. Chess has now, grown, in leaps and bounds.
And finally, in badminton, the 2023 Ugandan International Series, taking place at the Lugogo Indoor Stadium in Kampala, will be concluded on Sunday. 180 players from 27 countries are competing for the 2024 Paris Olympic Games qualification points, which also offers a total prize pool of $10,000.
And that's a wrap for the October 6th edition of the show. Hope you all have a great weekend. I'm Muck Bill Yabaro in Washington. Sonny Young will be back on Monday. And that is the Sunny Side of Sports.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Here's what's coming up on Africa News tonight. More than 2,500 migrants died or went missing while trying to cross the Mediterranean to Europe so far this year. And Liberia will hold its fourth post-war election on October 10th, 2023.